Welcome to the Excellence in Church Administration podcast, informing, encouraging, and supporting your church. Your hosts are Michael Martin and Dan Busby from ECFA.
Hi, this is Michael Martin from ECFA. We are so glad that you've tuned in for another Excellence in Church Administration podcast. Well, hey, I will admit that I'm really excited for today's episode, and not just because of the great content that we'll be covering. We're talking about building God-honoring cultures of financial integrity in our churches, but I'm also really excited by the fact that I am joined today by two of my great friends from ECFA, who I believe are the leading voices to speak into this topic, Dan Busby and John Van Drunen. Dan and John serve on the leadership team here at ECFA as president and executive vice president, and they both speak from such wisdom and a passion for the local church. So guys, welcome back, and thanks for being willing to share with our podcast community.
It's great to be here, Michael.
Yes, thanks for this opportunity.
Awesome. Well, hey, as I mentioned earlier, our focus today is going to be around the importance of financial integrity in the church, which of course is core to who we are at ECFA. But not just the importance of this topic from a philosophical standpoint, we're also going to get just very practical with five specific building blocks that we believe every church should have in place as part of its foundation for ministry. And just to set the stage here briefly, we all know, of course, that financial integrity has always been important in ministry. God has commanded us to be good stewards of all that he has entrusted to us in sharing the gospel. And the church of all organizations should be leading the way and setting the bar in this area. But I would say that in all of our conversations that we're having with church leaders today, that the importance of financial integrity and demonstrating that integrity before givers and a watching world is really heightened. It's heightened in a world today that's constantly changing and in many ways growing less trusting, even in churches. In fact, there was a recent statistic from Barna that really grabbed my attention, where Barna found in their research that 1 in 4 Americans now identify today as either atheist or agnostic. And beyond that, one of the top reasons for their disbelief, they cited, was lack of trust in the local church. And so we just believe that there has to be something done about that. And that's why it's our mission at ECFA to partner with great churches like yours in enhancing trust, specifically in the area of financial integrity, so that the Great Commission could be fulfilled. Well, we could definitely go on, but I think that's a really great launching point here as we transition into some practical steps that we can take as churches to build that culture of financial integrity and trust. And I think whether you're serving in a newer startup church or maybe you're with a larger, more established ministry, the five building blocks that Dan and John will be covering today, these are going to be great areas for everyone to review and consider and maybe even to bring before the rest of your leadership teams for discussion. So without further ado, Dan, here we go. We're going to start off with you. We say that the first building block to financial integrity is committed leadership, which I think is so appropriate to start this conversation with leaders who, by definition, should be setting that tone for the organization. So can you tell us more about why leadership and governance are so important to building cultures of financial integrity?
Yes. Well, Michael, everyone has heard the phrase, the tone must be set at the top.
Right.
Never is that more true than with a church. The senior pastor must set the tone. The church board or boards must also set the tone. It's been my experience that financial integrity travels down the organization chart of a church and rarely up the chart. A leader's character either infects others with desire to serve with integrity or thwarts it. Christ-centered, spirit-empowered church leadership starts with prayer and spiritual discernment. You know, we see in Acts 6:4 that the governing leaders wanted to remain focused on the word and prayer. So what happens when a church has committed leadership? Well, I'm convinced it results in harmonious governance. If church leaders and board members are like-minded in Christ and are not self-focused, harmony will be a natural result. If harmony doesn't exist between the senior pastor and the governing board, both will be ineffective. To further board objectivity, ECFA's standards require that a majority of the members of the top governing board of the church be independent. For example, not family members or on the church staff. So, Michael, when I think of church leadership and governance and committed leadership, I remember what Richard Blackaby once said. He said, "Our problem as leaders is we do everything we know to do. But that's not enough. We need to do everything God wants us to do." That's what committed leaders do.
Well, amen to that. I think you got us started off well there. I like what you said about really committed leadership and financial integrity. This is going to be something that travels down the organizational chart. That's good. Well, John, our next building block is what we call sound financial management. And we know that integrity requires administering church finances with diligence. So can you expand on the details a little bit there? What are some of the keys to financial management that you've seen are most important to a church?
Thanks, Michael. Sound financial management for a church is simply faithful administration of church resources. It's hard work, and it's not for the faint of heart. Still, it's what God expects. Honorable administration requires intentionality to do what is right before God and man. As 2 Corinthians 8, 20-21 says, "We intend that no one should blame us about this generous gift that we are administering, for we intend to do what is right, not only in the Lord's sight, but also in the sight of others." In this respect, church administration requires a level of spiritual discernment and prudence. Sometimes I'll hear someone comment that something's legal, and therefore they're going to take that course of action. We need to take a higher road than this as we determine the prudence of a decision. That being said, this prudence requires sound financial management as a component of the faithful administration of the church. What does sound financial management involve? Here's six essentials of that. First would be budgeting. Developing and following a budget is a fundamental concept for churches. A budget is a plan for allocating available resources. It's a strategic way to dispense money to areas of ministry in the church. Second is cash reserves. Cash reserves are the cushion that ensures that operating expenses are paid on time, the church is in compliance with mortgage covenants, and funds are available to replace worn-out equipment, resurface parking lots, and much more. Solid accounting systems is the third here. These concepts are important to provide accurate information for church leaders in a way that they easily understand. The fourth would be complying with laws. Churches need to demonstrate integrity as they comply with federal, state, and local laws. And the fifth here would be internal controls and fraud avoidance. Four big pictures here are issues that are often overlooked by churches, including lack of dual controls, ignoring or overriding good policies, collusion between two or more key church staff members or volunteers, and long-term employees with inadequate oversight. Internal or external audits. Larger churches should have an annual audit by an independent CPA. For example, churches with $3 million or more in total revenue must have an external audit to meet ECFA standards. But every church that does not have a CPA audit should have an internal audit conducted by qualified individuals. What we do is more than handle money, issue receipts, ensure the accurate depositing of gifts. Our faithful financial administration helps facilitate ministry. In that light, we engage in divine service. That means it delivers blessings when we do it well. As our colleague Dr. Gary Hoag often says, God is more interested in accountability than we are.
Oh, that's good. Well, and you're right that it really is all about facilitating ministry. I like how you said that, John. And I know we packed a lot of content in that point. And the good news is, if you're trying to keep up with that, that the five building blocks that we're covering today, and including that section that John just covered, they're all in an ebook, The Five Building Blocks of Church Financial Integrity, which you'll hear more about here in a moment. But let's, Dan, let's turn to you and follow up on the great points that John shared on sound financial management. Kind of a related area would be appropriate transparency when it comes to finances. Why have you seen that appropriate transparency is so important for churches?
Well, Michael, transparency is one of those challenging topics for churches. Today, churches often face an insatiable desire for transparency. Questions are often asked such as, How much is the senior pastor being paid? How much are certain staff members being paid? How much are we spending on this and how much are we spending on that? We've all heard those questions. And the secret is finding the balance between being appropriately transparent while measuring privacy concerns and administrative burdens. Let me say that another way. Churches must find the sweet spot between absolute transparency and no transparency. It's what I call appropriate transparency. That's where trust is maximized with minimal disruption or risk to the church. You know, think of a transparency continuum with absolute transparency at one extreme and no transparency at the other end of the continuum. With absolute transparency, nothing's confidential. Transparency at this level is generally beyond the pale. Consider the resulting havoc caused if a church shares confidential employment-related discussions and actions, the names of givers and the amount they gave, and more. But on the other side of the continuum is no transparency. Everything's a secret. This fuels negative perceptions, and nothing will rain on a church's parade more than the perception that something shady is going on with the finances. If givers don't have high confidence that their gifts are being stewarded with wisdom and in ways that tangibly support the mission of the church, they often dial back their giving. While the complete lack of transparency may work for a while, it's rarely positive in the long term. You know, Mother Teresa once said, "Honesty and transparency make you vulnerable." But she went on to say, "Be honest and transparent anyway."
Well, those are some good reminders and a lot of wisdom on a what I know can be a really challenging area, like you mentioned, Dan. So thanks so much for sharing that. Well, guys, this has been an awesome discussion so far. And to all of our listeners, if you have enjoyed this conversation and you're wanting to dive even deeper into this topic, I know we're just scratching the surface here today. You'll definitely want to check out this announcement from Tracy Weber on ECFA's Church Engagement Team. And we will be right back with Dan and John to finish out the rest of the five building blocks to church financial integrity.
Hey, well, thanks, Michael. And we've got three exciting resources to share with you today as part of this five building blocks podcast. First is the ebook that Michael's already alluded to. It's called The Five Building Blocks of Church Financial Integrity, and it's a fabulous companion to this podcast. It will help increase your confidence to grow your church on a solid foundation. And it's available free in the ebook section of churchexcel.org. And that leads me to the next exciting resource from ECFA, Church Excel. If you haven't already engaged with the free Church Excel community, we invite you to get connected. It's easy. Just go to churchexcel.org and create your free sign-in. Hundreds of free resources, including policies and procedures, ebooks, recorded webinars, and more are at your fingertips 24/7. That's churchexcel.org. You don't want to miss out. And finally, if your church is ready to demonstrate its integrity through ECFA certification, a new simplified application makes the process easy and streamlined, saving you time, and it begins a partnership with ECFA that will support and encourage your church. Get started at ecfa.church/join or email Michael at ecfa.org for more information. And that wraps up our resources for today, Michael. So let's finish out the rest of the building blocks.
Well, hey, thanks so much, Tracy. We appreciate you and the great team at ECFA making so many of these wonderful resources available for churches. And Tracy's right. If your church isn't a certified member of ECFA yet, churchexcel.org is a great place to start in building that culture of financial integrity with so many free resources that are available, including things like free sample policies and procedures. There are training courses, webinars, and more. Just email us at podcast@ecfa.org if you need any help getting your hands on these great tools. Well, let's jump right back as we promised here into our last few minutes on the five building blocks with number four, excellence in compensation setting and conflicts of interest. Well, John, what do these two areas have in common and why are they so critical for churches to get right?
Thanks, Michael. You know, one of the things, and it goes back to what Dan shared about appropriate transparency, this is a really fundamental issue to get the process down pat, because that's going to enhance trust. You know, these are two really important areas, compensation setting and conflicts of interest. You know, in compensation, the key is to pay pastors fairly, following sound practices and establishing compensation and fringe benefits. You know, in terms of compensation levels, most ministers in the U.S. are paid very modestly. Rarely is there an excessive compensation issue. We're reminded in 1 Timothy 5:18 that the laborer deserves his wages. And to change a pattern of what I might say in some cases are extremely modest compensation to a more adequate pay package that's reasonable and not putting undue burden on that pastor usually requires a champion within the church, usually a member of the church governing board. A champion is someone trusted by the pastor and by the board who can call attention to the inadequacies of pay and benefits. Now, there's four steps that we'd suggest handling pastoral compensation fairly and to follow sound practices. First, start with compensation setting philosophy and look at 1 Timothy 5:17 and 18. The elders who direct the affairs of the church are worthy of double honor, especially those who work whose work is preaching and teaching. Second, make independent decisions. The pastor should not be part of the compensation setting process, nor should anyone that lacks independence. Third, gather comparable compensation data. Periodically obtain comparable data, and there's a number of different resources that are available for churches. Fourth, document compensation decisions. Document the gross pay and fringe benefit decisions at the time they're made. Now, in terms of handling conflicts of interest, a church board member or pastor, for example, may be presented with a decision where they're responsible for promoting one interest at the same time that they're competing interests, maybe financial interests. These situations often relate to the expenditure of church funds for services or products. The key is avoiding transactions with conflicts of interest unless they meet strict guidelines. Churches should take these four steps to handle related party transactions with integrity. First, exclude. All parties with a conflict of interest, direct or indirect, should be excluded from the discussion and the vote related to the transaction. Second, compare. Use reliable comparative information from appropriate independent sources, such as competitive bids. Third is determine. Determine whether the transaction is in the best interest of the church. That it may require some spiritual discernment, as we were talking about earlier. And the fourth is document. Appropriately document the steps of those first three steps. So again, exclude, compare, determine, and document. Even when all the above precautions are observed, the church may still be at risk to criticism from givers, the staff, or the media, or even other members of the general public. This risk may be so significant that the transaction should be avoided. So, Michael, I just encourage everyone to give some thoughtful consideration to the Spirit's leading after they've gone through these steps, just to make sure that they're exercising that spiritual prudence.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's good. And just those four points on each are great to walk through, and certainly two very important areas, like you mentioned, John. So, well, hey, Dan, we are in the home stretch now. And last but certainly not least, we say that the fifth and the final building block to church financial integrity is trustworthy stewardship. What exactly do we mean by that?
Well, Michael, people in the pew are desperate for authenticity, to know the unvarnished truth. Truth-telling that generates trust is important in all aspects of the church, but especially so in raising financial support and regarding financial accountability. You know, after all, God is a truth-teller, and we must be truth-tellers too. Truth-telling has many faces, but one area that can be especially troublesome for churches is designated gifts. You know, the technical reference is actually restricted gifts. Let me share four essentials about handling designated gifts. First of all, we should have clarity in communication. When a church receives gifts for anything other than for the operational budget, we must be crystal clear about how and when the funds will be used. So clarity in communication. Secondly, separately recording designated gifts. Money raised for designated purposes must be tracked separately in the accounting records to document both the amount received and the amount spent. So clarity in communication, separately recording designated gifts, and then thirdly, do what you say you're going to do. When a church accepts designated gifts for a certain purpose, they must be spent that way and in a timely manner. End of story. So first, clarity in communication. Second, separately record designated gifts. Third, do what you say you're going to do. And then finally, number four, be alert to underfunding or overfunding of a project. You know, when we announce a certain project at a church with a certain dollar goal, it is rare that the goal is exactly reached to the dollar. Usually, gifts exceed the goal or less than the goal. And so the key is providing clear communication to givers as to what will happen if a project is overfunded or underfunded. You know, there are a host of other issues we could discuss as it relates to trustworthy stewardship, but properly handling designated gifts is truly a huge one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right. There's a lot to consider there, but I know that what we've given folks today, these are some great areas to think through. So thank you so much, guys. You know, when we talk about the five blocks in a building analogy, we also always say here at ECFA that accountability, it's like the glue that holds all those blocks together. Anyone who has toddlers can relate to this. In other words, maintaining church financial integrity, it requires a certain support system to really be successful in the long run. And so accountability, it's really that continued supporter, the glue that's needed to hold building blocks one through five that we talked about today of church financial integrity firmly in place. We know that churches can put accountability structures in place in a number of ways, but one of the really great trends that we're seeing more of these days is churches pursuing a certification through ECFA. And in doing so, what they're doing is stepping up to say that we want to operate by the highest standards of financial integrity, and we want a partner that's going to help hold ourselves accountable and to be able to demonstrate that commitment to others. And ECFA's trusted seal of integrity for certified churches, it's a tangible sign of that commitment that really increases trust with givers and the public. And that's really why I think we are seeing such a record number of churches pursuing ECFA membership. If you have any questions about that process or what it takes to become certified, you can connect with us more at ecfa.church/join. Well, on that note, I'd like to transition now to John, who's going to close us out, as we always do, with a verse or an encouragement that's related to today's topic. So, John, what reflections do you have as you think about these building blocks of church financial integrity?
Well, thanks, Michael. And I think just a word of encouragement is that these principles, the faithful administration of the church, are principles that transcend time and culture. First, in terms of time, we see Paul's admonishing and encouraging the churches to be faithful, to do what's right, not only in the Lord's eyes, but also in the eyes of men. And so that prudence was introduced many years ago. And then also in terms of cultures, we're seeing international accountability groups similar to ECFA coming up and coming alongside of ECFA in areas like Australia, South Korea, Philippines, Guatemala, in a continent-wide effort in Africa. If you'd like to know more about that, we'd be happy to share that, but we're just really encouraged by that. So I think as people are listening to the podcast, they just have to recognize that this is something that truly is beyond our measurement, and that we just need to continually seek the Lord's guiding as we seek to be faithful in the administration of the church.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you shared earlier, that God really cares about accountability more than we do, and it's not just in the United States, but It's around the world, and it's so important for our churches to get right. So that is really encouraging. Thank you for that, John. And Dan, thanks again for joining us as well and sharing the great insights that you had today. And finally, of course, to all those who've tuned in, we want to thank you for investing this time with us to grow in your leadership and integrity. It is our privilege to get to stand with you, and we'd love your help spreading the word about this resource from ECFA. So be sure to rate and review the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, and take a minute just to share it on social media. And until next time, you can stay connected with us through Facebook and Twitter and on our website at ecfa.church. If you have any questions regarding today's podcast or the resources that we've mentioned here today, you can, again, just email us at podcast@ecfa.org. Well, God bless you, and we look forward to being with you again soon for another Excellence in Church Administration podcast.